much about the French I took, but I do know that I love you.
World, it's here to another episode of Conservative Casual Friday, a weekly blog talk radio show with your show host, Andrew Herod, where we like to discuss the important issues of the day for conservatives and others. And today we want to be talking about American education and whether people are learning enough history or French or trigonometry and other subjects, and talking with former high school English teacher Jeremy Wayne Tate, who's founded the Classical Learning Test in 2015 in order to lead a return in American education to its historical classical roots, emphasizing great works and ideas. He wants to supplement the increasingly dumbed-down scholastic aptitude test, the SAT, with his new CLT. We want to discuss about his approach to American education, his attempt to revitalize classical education in America, and what that would mean for our society. Well, Jeremy Wayne Tate, thank you for joining the show.
Hey, Andrew, thrilled to be here. How are you?
Oh, fine. Excellent. Well, just starting out, introducing you to our listeners here, discuss your background and how did you become interested in education and classical education?
Sure. You know, I grew up, my mom was a teacher. She actually was a French teacher, and French and Spanish teacher. So grew up, education was always very much focused on in the house, but it really was later on in life, even after undergrad, when I was in seminary, that I had this kind of epiphany of holy smokes, what we're doing right now in mainstream education is fundamentally different than almost every generation before us, what we're going after. Every generation before us was going after character development, the cultivation of virtue. Education was heavy on grammar, logic, rhetoric, classical languages, philosophy, ethics. So much of what was the meat and potatoes of a good American education is no longer part of it at all in any meaningful sense.
Well, how did that happen? How did that change occur? When did it occur? What went on with that?
Yeah, so really, you know, starting up in New England after the Civil War, you have the beginnings of compulsory education, and this is the Industrial Revolution. And so education goes from being a craft, really much a soul craft, shaping, molding young people to be virtuous, to be eloquent, right, to speak well, to think well, to write well. Education becomes assembly line. It becomes factory model schooling, right? And so it happens, and then it spreads rapidly. Then once you get into the 20th century, education becomes a vehicle, a lever to kind of push new ideology onto young families that differed from what they were learning at home. And this has gone on now for, you know, well over a century that we have moved away from classical education, which was the kind of education that was in place for 2,000 years in the West, to this new, what I would describe as secular progressive education. It is fundamentally different in its goals and in its substance and what it does than education as it was for again, every generation before us.
Well, that raises interesting questions of, you know, who promoted this. I guess bringing in sort of a personal connection here. You know, from my alma mater, Amherst College, one of the graduates there was Thomas Dewey, I believe it was, from the creator of the Dewey Decimal System, a library catalog system in libraries. And I recall he was sort of one of these new educators. I mean, what did people like him do to education?
Yeah, I mean, Dewey was interested in kind of the pragmatic aims of education, right? And so the question was, you know, why would we study French? Why would we study Latin? You know, why would we study art history? None of that is useful, right? And so the idea was that students should be only focusing on what is useful, right? And I've been surprised, I got to tell you, you know, even a lot of conservatives, I think, have bought into this idea that we should only focus on the things that are useful, which means we get away from philosophy. We get away from Latin. We get away from classical languages. But think about America itself. 100% of our founders, 100% were classically educated. In many ways, America is simply the product of 17th century Enlightenment philosophy. I mean, that's what America is. They took the best ideas from the Enlightenment about how a government should relate and how they could be structured, and they applied that to give birth to a new country, the greatest country that's ever been. And so we need to reclaim students. The whole point of schooling, of education, again, is not just learning things. That's important. But it's passing down an entire way of life, right? It's drawing people in to a way of looking and seeing the world. And I think, you know, I'm very concerned, not just failing schools, you know, culture is 20 years down the road of kind of what's happening in mainstream education. And I think we have a lot to be concerned about for the next generation.
Well, you talk about the founding fathers, you say they were really all 100% classically educated. I mean, we often read of, Jefferson and others, you know, they did indeed study Greek or Latin. That was sort of considered basic education at the time of the founding. Why did they emphasize this classical education so much? I mean, what did they see in classical education, and why did they focus so much on the ancient world?
Yeah, and it wasn't, you know, nobody called it classical education then. It was just education, right? I think a good analogy is kind of like with milk, right? If you're like a young hippie kind of person, you're drinking, you know, organic raw milk right now, right? Well, what we call organic raw milk, it was just called milk 200 years ago, right? Just came straight out of the cow, and it was just called milk. Same thing with education. We now are calling this classical education because there's been something new that has developed, and so to describe the genuine article, you know, we need this modifier. What kind of education? Classical, as it always was. So I think of it sometimes as like the raw organic milk of education. So why did they care about this? Why was it so? Well, again, America is born, 1776. Think about where we're at in world history then, right? We're after this period of great development in especially political philosophy, John Locke, thinking about the social contract, how a government could relate to the governed. The whole idea of self-government being deeply tied to virtue, right? This is the understanding of the human nature. You have no need for government at all. If there is, if we get rid of sin, right? If we get rid of human wrongdoing, that's the only reason we have government. And so when people can be disciplined and they can be virtuous and of good character, then self-government is very much possible. And that's the kind of society that we had. You know, we're kind of on the heels of the legacy of the Puritans in New England. It was very much a society that valued and cultivated and lifted up people of good character, hard work, self-discipline, moderation, many of these things that have been wholly lost now to our society. So again, it was what they were studying. Yes, that matters absolutely. But for them, education was passing down an entire way of life. It was an entire way of life.
And you talked about the compulsory schooling developing in New England. I guess so. Then before that, I mean, historically, you know, you read about colonial America. You know, then education really was what we, I guess what we would call homeschooling, or often indeed in churches. I mean, that was is basically the, I guess, the family and religious institutions that led the way in education of children. Is that, you know, have public schools really been a benefit, or is it, you know, should we really sort of radically revise education and emphasize much more sort of homeschooling, church schooling, you know, I guess much more of a school choice method?
Yeah, you know, Andrew, we're living through a seismic change in education. The disruption that's happening now, well, we're experiencing more disruption in a period of 5 years than maybe the 100 years before it. There is a mass exodus. The mainstream media, they don't want to cover this story. They really don't. But there is a major exodus happening right now from some of the biggest public school systems in the United States, Los Angeles, New York City. Folks realized what was happening during COVID. They didn't like what they were seeing. They didn't like what their sons and daughters were being taught. And they're looking now for different options. And so in many ways, you know, there is a recovery, a renaissance of classical education happening, and there is a return to education as it was, again, for generation after generation after generation. And yeah, homeschooling is a big part of this. As the founding generation, you know, you would maybe be sent off to boarding school if you were, you know, super affluent, but most of good education happened at home. It was that's where you learned, and it was completely integrated and connected to your formation as a whole person, right? And so, yeah, these things are all very much connected.
Well, and thinking of that colonial model, or, you know, founding era model, I guess that brings up the issue of, you know, talking about this classical education, this original education. What role then does, you know, the Bible and Christianity, you know, Judeo-Christian tradition play in this? And how does that then interact with, say, people in America or elsewhere who don't come from such a Judeo-Christian background?
Yeah, it's a really great question, right? Yeah, and so, I mean, the origins of American education, I mean, just objectively, whether or not somebody believes in the Bible or not, you know, the first legislation in the New World regarding education is 1648, I believe, and it was called the Deluder Satan Act. You know, it was the whole purpose was to require every town and village to make sure that young people were learning to read, specifically so they could read the Bible, right? And so what do we do then for, you know, we're in a pluralistic society, what do? Right? And I think that's why, you know, we have seen school choice go from really not an issue anybody was talking a whole lot about 10 years ago to an issue that's polling well north of 70% for Americans being supportive of school choice, right? We're talking about introducing the free market into American education. If a parent wants to send their kid to a Christian school, fantastic, absolutely. They should be able to do that, and they should be able to take their money with them, because the money is intended to fund students, not systems. If they want to go to a Jewish school, fantastic. If they want to go to a Muslim school, or if they want to go to, you know, a hippie, left-wing, atheist school, let them do that as well, right? It is not the government's job to prescribe what young people are learning.
And this classical education offering, that brings up another issue. Well, I guess one thing, another thing I thought of is, you know, I've often learned in history, talking about the American founding, it's often noted that America actually established a reputation at the time of its founding that was really a literate society. I mean, Americans were known for being in contrast to, say, British people, that they're really known for being literate in education. Why was that so? Do you have any knowledge of that?
Yeah, I think, you know, the Reformation maybe is part of this. You know, I mean, the Reformation, you know, it, of course, it doesn't start in England, but it finds its first very well-established church, you know, with the Anglican Church, King Henry VIII. And so what you have is the beginning of a very literate culture. You know, the printing press, of course, is going to make that happen. And, you know, it's people say, you know, it's being somehow white supremacist or something like that to say, well, you know, we should, you know, have young people mastering grammar, mastering spelling and punctuation and syntax and these things that have been largely forgotten. And the reason why, I mean, that America was founded by English-speaking people. We were founded by the English. And so this is the governmental history of America. It is deep in the culture still. Of this great country. So I think that's what I think would be the reason for that, Andrew.
Well, yeah, and so talking about classical education, we sort of touched upon this. How does this then appeal, you know, to everyone? I mean, if you talk about Greek and Latin, have you found in your experience of, you know, you've discussed before that on your CLT board, I mean, you have, you know, non-Christian people on like Hamza Yusuf from a Muslim background. Is this something that's really appealing to a lot of people from all sorts of different backgrounds?
That is such a great question you ask. Yes, absolutely. I mean, there's a renaissance of classical education happening in the Jewish community. It's happening in the Muslim world. Hamza Yusuf, yes, is a friend. He's the president of a Great Books Muslim college, Zaytuna in California, right? And this is in our history. You think about the dialogue that Thomas Aquinas had with Avicenna in the 13th century. I mean, this is classical education because it's aimed at the same end, right? And, you know, really a book that has been profoundly influential on me over the past couple of years, especially, is C.S. Lewis's Abolition of Man. Because what Lewis does there is he puts his finger on exactly what changed, right? We all kind of know something is really wrong. And I think Lewis articulated it, and he articulated what was coming as well. And I, as a big C.S. Lewis fan, I think this is where he is at his most alarmist. You read The Abolition of Man, and you're like, this is not good. Because he describes this kind of education that if the society adopts it, it will destroy that society. It's the education that he calls, you know, it's outlined in this book that he calls the Green Book and The Abolition of Man. Well, that is the kind of education that mainstream America has adopted. The language that he uses in The Abolition of Man is the Tao. And by the Tao, he basically means the same thing as what we would call natural law in the West. But he uses the language of the Tao to make this universal appeal, right, that happy students, happy people are conforming to reality itself, right? God's law makes up the fabric of reality, rather than trying to either change reality or to deny its existence altogether. And so, you know, this battle that we're having, and this is the battle going on in America right now. The education is the battlefield. And thank you.
Yeah, I guess that brings up an important point that I feel too, that you discussed, you know, growing support for school choice. I mean, it seems to me that in the past, sometimes many people have sort of maybe not really paid attention to schools, or, you know, just sort of assumed the status quo. But as you bring out, that education really is an ideological battlefield. Our society really is being shaped by what's being taught in these schools. I mean, this is something that affects people. I've had this conversation before with other people on my show, talking about schools, and, you know, I've said, well, look, you know, I personally don't have any kids, you know, why should I care? And, of course, the response has come back is, look, you know, this education is shaping your society. It's shaping the world that you live in. It's going to, you know, these people coming out of their schools, they're going to direct the course of your society. So, yeah, I think it's very real what you're saying, that, you know, education, you know, K-12, or for that matter, in the university system, it's becoming a central battleground, and indeed, in what's been called, you know, this culture war. It's the Harvard professor, I believe, Kessler, his name, described it as this cold civil war that's affecting our country, that we have this clash of philosophical absolutes. I mean, it's not something that can resolve itself like the old hot civil war over sectional secession and slavery, you know, any sort of combat, but it is indeed a profound philosophical battle. So, I think more and more people are becoming aware of what we're dealing with.
Well, Andrew, before I run, I want to thank you, but also recommend and just kind of give some shout-outs as well. I mean, there's a recovery effort underway right now. I mean, there really is. There's a classical renewal movement, and there have been people who have been on the front lines of this now for a quarter of a century, I think, before, you know, most of us started talking about it or even questioning what was happening, you know. And some of those people, one would be David Goodwin. David is the president of the Association of Classical Christian Schools in America. He's absolutely one. Chris Perrin, he's the founder and CEO of Classical Academic Press. I would encourage you to reach out to get these guests. You've got a great platform here and audience to get these guests on and keep focusing on education.
Awesome. Well, excellent. Well, closing out here, if you've got to take off, just tell our listeners then how they could follow up a bit more on your work and where to contact you to find out about these great programs you're pursuing.
Yeah, the best way to contact me is via Twitter. My handle is JeremyTate41. The website is cltexam.com. Again, cltexam.com. If you Google the classic learning test, you'll be able to find a lot of media coverage on what we're doing as well. Andrew, thanks so much. Super honored to be with you, to be a guest. And have a wonderful rest of your weekend.
All right, well, excellent. For our listeners out there, you've been listening to another episode of Conservative Casual Friday Weekly Blog Talk Radio Show with your show host, Andrew Herod. And we've been talking with Jeremy Wayne Tate, the founder of Classical Learning Test in 2015, and his efforts to bring a classical education back to American schools and society. Well, Jeremy, thank you for joining the show.
Thank you, Andrew.
And for our listeners out there, I'll have to be telling you, unlike other past episodes, I'll be taking a leave of absence from Conservative Casual Friday for the coming month or so. I have to actually deal with personal matters, dealing with the estate of my late mother who recently died. That's going to be a big full-time job. So we'll have to see when I'll be able to return to Conservative Casual Friday. And our listeners out there, thank you for any all who've tuned in and enjoyed the show and for your support. And I've enjoyed being on here with all of the various great guests who come on and to talk about the interesting things they're doing and the interesting perspectives they have on key issues of the day. But thank you all, and we'll see when I can return to Conservative Casual Fridays.